This podcast is brought to you by MITEX, the Massachusetts Innovation and Technology Exchange, the region's premier association for thought leadership, technology trends, building business relationships, and professional training and development. For more information, go to www.mitx.org.
Hey, get your fresh BizCast here. I'm DC Dennison, and this week it's an experimental beta roundtable edition with Maura Welsh, the business filter blogger from Boston.com.
Hey, Maura. DC.
And Mike O, CEO of Tech Superpowers and member of the Mayor's Task Force on Wi-Fi.
Hey, DC.
All right, welcome. So Maura, I picked up a copy of New York Magazine with a cover story on blogs. You've been blogging since October. How's that changing? What's developing in that space?
Well, I think when you've got a cover story in New York Magazine, it probably hit the big time. And I think everybody's been really trying to figure out what this blog is all about. And it's funny, you know, I talk to people out there that are, you know, pretty connected and pretty technically savvy, and they're still like on the QT coming over to me and saying, "What is a blog?
Like, oh, yeah.
what do you mean you blog? People pay you to blog? What do you do?" And it's just an odd thing to talk about. Until you read them, you don't really know. But what I think is interesting about this New York magazine piece, which I've found as I've started the blog at Boston.com, is that it's an awful lot like the real world. It's tough to get connected.
Uh-huh.
That there's a really popular group of blogs that have been out there blogging, you know, which now is a long time, would be 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
That would be just ancient history.
Yeah.
3 years is like, oh my gosh. And the blogs that have been out there the longest are the most popular. And there's a whole raft of B-list and C-list blogs, and that's sort of what this New York Magazine piece touches on. That's
the rich get richer.
The rich get richer,
yeah.
The heavily linked get more heavily linked,
mm-hmm.
and so that just seems to run it up. But blogging itself is an amazing experience. I love the feedback from readers, and to watch yourself and what you're writing about sort of move around the blogosphere and go on technorati.com and sort of see what's going on is really just a fascinating social experiment.
You know, I forgot to mention we're here at the Trident Bookseller and Cafe, and this is probably, Mike, you mentioned before we started, probably a big blogging center, actually, for Boston.
Right, and one of the essential things about the most successful blogs that I've seen is that there's sort of a spontaneity involved, and they're sort of reporting on things which are, you know, of concern to them, but obviously a lot of other people are interested in when they read about it. But it happens, they sort of post very quickly, and they're able to sort of react very quickly to things that are going on. And, you know, that's this whole idea also that blogs are very sort of connected to citizen journalism, where, you know, people that are doing blogs can kind of report on news before, you know, the more traditional places can report on it. And so, you know, an essential piece of that, I find, is having good access, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, having Wi-Fi access throughout the city, or having, you know, Wi-Fi in your favorite cafe, or, you know, in places nearby, is sort of essential for the blogs to really kind of keep their you know, sort of the spontaneity and keep their sort of spark that everyone's interested in. And I think there's a lot of people that use these Wi-Fi locations as bloggers to sort of,
mm-hmm.
you know, make a little update, put in a little comment, you know,
yeah.
Get on with their
mm-hmm.
laptop, or, you know, send in a photo of something on the street, you know, something that they find. And I think that's, you know, an important sort of technical piece, or,
mm-hmm.
you know, almost a requirement for these blogs to really sort of hit the mainstream like they have.
Yeah, and do you ever blog on the road, Maura?
Yeah, I've blogged on the road with my laptop. I think what I'd really like to do is key something into my cell phone and have it publish up to the blog, which is something that I've heard people have done. And you can sort of watch people, you know, like if you see, you know, guys like Scoble, who does the Scobalizer, and these, or people going on the road, you'll hear about their entire trip. Okay, I'm in the airport.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, right.
You know, and they'll have a thought on the way. I like reading Guy Kawasaki's blog because he's almost always in some hotel room just before he goes and presents somewhere. And so, you know, you get a little bit of the place that the person is in. But I do think you're right that it's all about the sort of currentness, and it's reacting to news and reacting to stories as they're happening that really makes it fresh, and which always also makes it very interesting to get into the blogging space, because Like, you know, I think Peter Rojas talked about it in Engadget in this article. It's just, it's a burnout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm up at 5:30 in the morning. You know, I'm like blogging away, you know. And then, you know, I can't go to bed without, you know, checking everything over and kind of get... So you're just always on. It's an always on kind of culture.
Yeah, it's murderous. Mike, do you read any blogs? Are there any that you see out there that cover the Wi-Fi space, or are there certain sites that you hit, find yourself hitting?
Yeah, it's sort of interesting because, you know, the ones that I go to are sort of borderline between news sites and blogs, and it's now getting to the point where it's very vague between, you know, what you would consider sort of legitimate news and a blog. I mean, one of the great examples that I've seen recently is Glenn Fleischman's Wi-Fi Net News, which covers the Wi-Fi space, and they're talking about FON or phone or however you pronounce that company now lately.
FON,
yeah. And, you know, his coverage, you know, because he's more of a, he has a background on the journalism side, you know, and he covers it in a very much a kind of a news story kind of way, but he has interviews and he has very specific sort of details, much more than you sort of see in a CNN type of, you know, type of venue.
Yeah.
But, you know, because he's giving opinion, he's giving facts, he's doing interviews, and he's sort of incorporating sort of all these different pieces into his blog, you know, it really kind of, it's not simply just personal opinions and a story.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, current news that's relevant to you, it revolves around a certain topic, and also with some personal opinions. And to me, that's the most interesting kind of blogs, because, you know, as much as I can be very interested in what somebody else's life is like and what they're traveling to, you know, it's not really something I'm going to spend my time on as sort of a legitimate sort of business kind of use. But, you know, these sort of more borderline news slash blogs are really where I spend my time.
Yeah, I think the tech blogs, I just think there's the quality is so high.
Right, yeah.
I've never weighed into the political blogs. In fact, I go to one, Mimia Random, and they have politics and tech.
Yep.
And I always just go to the tech, and I kind of stay away from the politics because I just think it's muddier and it ranges much wider into fringes. Whereas the tech, once you find some good tech blogs, you know, the general level of quality is really high. But before we get off this, what do you think of the phone plan? That did you mention that in your blog?
I haven't blogged about phone yet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I got to do
that. It's an interesting model. Why don't you give a little background, or what's your take on it?
Well, you know, I do have quite a bit of background in the Wi-Fi sort of world. I mean, having worked on OpenNet and tried it and been doing this for a few years. And, you know, the interesting thing that both Glenn and I sort of have shared the opinions on is that, you know, the FON or whatever they're called, they really are rehashing a business model which has existed in a couple previous businesses. But obviously they've gotten the attention of sort of the appropriate people to sort of potentially get funding. You know, 18 million euros was sort of the last number that I heard.
And funding from, was it eBay and who else?
Google. Yeah. I think that's, and I think, you know, it could be a matter of just having the right timing. But at the same time, you know, none of the previous business models, I mean, you know, if you look back at companies like Sputnik, I think we're, you know, out there, and I think the FON CEO is, you know, has some sort of fringe relationship with the founder of Sputnik, and, you know, there are companies like Boingo and all these other places that try to create, you know, different business models for for-pay and free, you know, hotspot systems. And, you know, the idea of the for-pay supporting the free guys and all that kind of stuff has been done before. So I really do wonder, you know, whether or not those business models even before had even, you know, a fraction of the traction that was needed to make it kind of a successful, you know, model in sort of today's kind of world. You know, it's hard to say. I mean, I'm not going to make a sweeping generalization and say that they're going to fail, but, you know, I really... being involved, especially in community Wi-Fi stuff, I find it hard to believe that they're going to be able to create enough of a revenue stream, you know, to really justify, you know, building out a large network. I mean, this guy, you know, Martin, I think is the CEO's name, has some pretty grandiose dreams about FON City, where you know these FON systems will replace the idea of these municipal networks, like, you know, what's out in, you know, being proposed in Philly and even being discussed in Boston. And, you know, unless they're going to spend their 18 million euros giving away these boxes to people on the street, I really don't see that the market penetration is going to happen for them to do that. It's very possible they might prove me wrong, though. So who knows? We'll see what happens.
It seems like, you know, establishing Wi-Fi hotspots is it's kind of a pick and shovel operation where you can't sort of swoop down from above and sort of sprinkle them like pixie dust.
Right.
You know, it's hard to get in and to find a good spot to get the access point in there. All that stuff, that's slow work.
Yeah, and it's the hardest part. I mean, even at Trident, we just recently put in a DSL line here to sort of upgrade their Wi-Fi capabilities, and that was a 2 or 3 week process, coordinating with the DSL providers and all this kind of stuff. And I don't really sort of anticipate that, you know, Fawn will be, even if they give away the box, that people are just going to, you know, kind of, you know, pay $100 install fee and then get their own DSL line, hoping for this revenue to come in.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's definitely a lot more kind of like infrastructure that needs to be built out, but maybe they have plans for that. I mean, when you have people, you know, like Google sort of backing you, you know, maybe there are other things that are in place or that there are sort of those companies are working on that will lend itself to this Fawn model, but I haven't seen it yet.
So, Maura, what have you seen, what's impressed you lately in terms of businesses you've seen that have shown up in your blog?
Well, I think that...
you're looking through it right
now?
Yeah,
I'm looking at the blog right now. One of the things that we've been watching, that I've been watching a lot, is these video blogs. And there's one that Rocket Boom out of New York, which recently decided to take up advertising. And so to do that, they went on eBay. It's like the perfect, you know, next generation web company thing, right? So they go on eBay and they post 5 days worth of advertising. And the highest bidder is, who is it? It's ATM maker called TRM. I guess they have a big German audience at Rock and Boom, apparently.
Huh.
And this is a company that does a lot of business in Germany. So anyway, they bid it up to $40,000 for 5 days. And apparently, according to the co-founder of Rocket Boom, there are more, you know, large brand U.S. advertisers who really wanted to get in, but they couldn't make their ads fast enough because Rocket Boom wanted to do it, you know, next month. Mm-hmm. And apparently they're running out of cash or something, and they need the $40,000, so they're grabbing that. But it looks like they announced on their video blog yesterday that they were going to accept Earthlink as an advertiser. So it looks like they're moving along.
You can see, if you listen to podcasts, you can see certain advertisers, like Earthlink is major. They're on many sites. GoToMeeting is another one that's kind of a conferencing group. Company rather, and they're on a lot of podcasts. We're talking about Rocket Boom just getting a bunch of, just ducked out to take a phone call. Rocket Boom just got a $40,000, you know, ad buy on eBay.
Right.
I thought that was cool, and they played it into the show.
Absolutely.
I
think that the host of the show is going to produce the commercials as well, which I think is, she's built a whole personality around herself.
Mm-hmm.
Amanda Congdon is her name. So I think, you know, a lot of this, you know, sort of getting back to what makes a blog a good blog, it's the person that is involved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think she's a big part of why Rocket Boom is what it is. And, you know, if you haven't seen it yet, you've got to check it out because it's just kind of addicting. Once you watch one, you're like, okay, what's Amanda going to do today?
Yeah, you know? Yeah, there's something, the way they've parsed it out into just 5-minute segments every, 5 days a week. There's something very, it's like eating peanuts, you know, there's something very digestible about that, whereas so many other vlogs, they're, you know, 50 minutes one day and 15 seconds the next, and then nothing happens for 5 days.
Right.
And it, you know, I think something about that, you know, regularity gets people sort of, you know, you can grasp onto it better.
Right. I think it's what a lot of people out there are talking about, micro-chunking all of your content. I think that was, I don't know who
said
that first.
Oh, I like that concept.
That was Fred Wilson. It was, I think, on his VC blog. But, you know, it's like, what do you do with content now? Media companies have to understand you just micro-chunk everything and attach an ad to it and throw it out there into the world, and it'll find its way through each of these kind of distribution points, whether it's a video blog or a regular blog or traditional media.
Hmm.
You know, because I do think that we're in the sort of remote control world where we have fleeting moments of attention, you know, and attention, something will stop us along the way. And I found, as you know, just living through the Boston.com blog, is it has to have some element of what's happening right now. What's a pop culture piece? I mean, look at what happened with the Sudoku or
yeah.
thing.
Yeah, that was probably your most linked entry so far.
You got it. The Wall Street Journal did a piece on Sudoku and what craziness it was, and I just read the first paragraph, and one of their what they were talking about is that British Airways actually had to put out a memo to their pilots and their staff to not play Sudoku during takeoff and landing. So that's when you know things have gotten completely out of control, let alone the Wall Street Journal doing a piece on something like Sudoku. So, but it's apparently just absolutely huge, and it got tons of clicks. I mean, it just became the thing that just catapulted everything over the last week or so for the blog. So, yeah, I mean, I think, ostensibly, it's a business opportunity story. You know, mm-hmm. how are businesses going to capture the power of Sudoku?
Yeah. Hey, I think we should chunk this and not stay too long. I wanted to mention the other story that you sort of launched into the Globe newsroom that caused a million browsers to launch was Zillow.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I don't know whether Mike knows about Zillow. Why don't you explain what it is? It's a real estate site.
It's a real estate site, and it's got a sort of, Google mashup piece to it as well.
Right.
Because what you can do is you can go on there and you can type in your address or anybody else's address, mm-hmm. and a Google map pops up with everybody's house value mm-hmm. on it.
Yeah.
So you can, easily see who on your street owns what
Mike's
and for how much.
He's
typing it in. So first of all, that voyeur aspect is all there. So at first you would think it's a lot like there was a site called Domania years ago, and I used to know the CEO there, and it was a great idea. You would type in your address, and it would come back with a scattering of sort of like things in your neighborhood. The problem was it didn't have the maps, and it also didn't have the teeth that this does. This guy, apparently, he was the founder, was the CEO of Expedia.
Yeah.
The founder of Expedia, I think. And he had a much bigger vision, and what he's done is sort of connect in all of the pieces that are necessary to sell real estate on your own, to sort of disintermediate mm-hmm. the real estate business.
Yeah.
So it's, I'm expecting calls from, realtors saying, have you been? Because I think that's probably who's crawling on the site right now, worried about their jobs, because it's 6% is what the average that they get.
Yeah, yeah.
Not for long. If
now,
this
thing has the whole business launched, or is this some sort of beta? Because I noticed, it just flew through the newsroom. All of a sudden, everyone was checking, and you could hear people say, like, oh, too high, way too high, or not, oh, I'm getting ripped off, whatever.
Right.
But I didn't hear, I didn't get the sense that people were going to the next level and sort of posting their house. But is it all live and ready to go?
I'm not sure that the whole piece is ready to go. It says a beta on the site.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if I'd want to be the first one to go through Zillow, to sell my house. But I can see the writing on the wall. I mean, everybody at this point has probably done eBay. Everybody at this point has probably done Craigslist.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
So there's not much of a jump. I have an aunt who bought a mobile home on eBay. So there can't be you can't be too far from selling your house on Zillow. That's my sense.
Huh. Hey, well, listen, I think we're all set up. We'll chunk it right there.
We're
so, Maura and Mike, thanks a lot for stopping in. And tune in next week, and we'll try to do it again.
Sounds good.
Great. Thanks, DC.
All right. Thanks.